Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
And if it was never entertaining, you'd still listen because it's great, but that's a bonus we give you here at The Advertising Show. Being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine, visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe is a Big Radio Midgets production. And a very special guest today, his name is Kevin Lee out of New York. Kevin is author of a book, and this is a killer title, The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, and Advertising Anarchy. Didit.com is where you find out more about that. And we'll get into more of Kevin's background and everything, including where he lives. No, they don't have that on here. Anyway, no. But this is good. So welcome back. It's good to have you here at the Advertising Show. What is that you're holding there? What is that?
Well, you know, every book has a back section, a back cover, I should say, that says praise for, in this case, praise for Kevin Lee. The very last praise for Kevin Lee says, Kevin Lee is a rare combination of head in the clouds and feet on the ground. So I guess that's kind of a... I'm going to hit you high, and then I'm going to give you a compliment low. Anyway, it's an interesting book, Ray. I'm looking forward to the interview today. On the front cover, as you see there, it has an inset of a very close up of an eyeball, and the eyeball is a little bloodshot. So that's got to be an ad guy that posed for
Photoshop,
that.
Yeah.
Next week's guest is George Lois, and boy, talk about an exciting, person, legendary art director.
Sure.
If you watch Mad Men, I should say, on AMC,
right.
A very popular show.
A
lot of what we know from having had George Lois on the show a few times. I got to believe that some of those writers are talking with George because.
Yeah. It's kind of like when they did WKRP in Cincinnati. It was like, yeah, that really happens, by the way.
Yeah.
And everything that they say there is true, including the sexy secretary.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
So we'll talk with George next week about that. But not to get off of today's show, Kevin Lee, it says on the front cover, with Steve Baldwin. And no, it's not that Steve Baldwin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the sober one. Do I say that?
Speaking
no.
of sober people, Stuart Elliott of the New York Times.
Yes, former guest
did an
of the
article,
show, too.
Of course, yeah. Recently did an article on product placement on reality TV somehow seems more realistic. And basically what he's saying is the writer strikes keeps the television network scrambling to fill their schedules. The producers of reality shows are gladly stepping in to fill the vacuum. Of course they are.
Sure.
And with the propensity of those producers to incorporate the products of sponsors into the programs, don't be surprised if the vacuum bears a brand name like a Hoover or a Dyson, which, by the way, pretty much costs the same these days. It's typically easier to weave a product in an episode like American Idol. What would you do with a vacuum there? Or Survivor, they don't have electricity, then into scripted series like Grey's Anatomy or Two and a Half Men, which, by the way, is a great show. I love that
show. Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For one thing, the contestants in reality shows, Stewart says, are usually more willing to pitch products than the actors. Well, that's true. Actors prefer to worry about their art. And their long-term value. Basically, but as far as a reality-type person, he's like, yeah, what the heck, I'll do that, no problem.
Bring it on, baby.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
NBC, let's see, what is it, Teleflora, what is it? The reality, primetime spin reality program, Teleflora, the show, which also involves the NBC Morning Show Today, Red Book Magazine, will center on a search for America's favorite mom. So, you know, I really like the fact that they've gotten a little bit more creative, and I don't mind the product placement. That's nothing new. I mean, look way back when you go to the early long form shows like the
That's
variety
right.
shows and stuff. That
Texaco.
Was all product placement. Yeah, the
right.
Texaco and the back when they were advertising cigarettes, they specifically advertised a particular brand of cigarettes on a variety of shows, including I Love Lucy and more.
Mm-hmm.
So, know, and what about Ford Motor Cars in the Andy Griffith Show or the
sure.
Leave It to Beaver shows, you know, cars provided by Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been here all along, and I don't see the big deal. But I'm glad to see reality is picking up the the stuff to get it in there as well.
In fact, you could argue that the consumer is a little more sophisticated today, and it's not as covert as it once was. I mean, it was more in your face, I guess, years ago.
Yeah.
And as you were recollecting what was going on years ago, and I was seeing you struggle a little bit with that copy, you know, they say that eyes are the second thing to go as you get older.
I don't know, that's right in line. That's perfect. Absolutely. I like that.
That's true.
Go ahead. I was going to bring Gene on here for just a moment.
Well, let's bring Gene on. I can talk about
Gene,
this later.
It's time. Gene Bliss, the customer experience. You know, we're advertisers, and our clients are the marketers. At least I like to think of them that way. And she's got a feature on her customer experience today that says, Why Customer Efforts Fail. Let's find out what she's talking about.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
If you have tried repeatedly to get a focus on customers and customer profitability inside your organization with less than stellar results, you're far from alone. Most companies jump in without evaluating how the organization works together and whether they're truly committed for the long haul ahead. When the CEO says, go focus on the customer, everyone takes it differently. People want to salute the flag, they just don't know exactly what that means. A proliferation of tactics, vendor proposals, and actions gets going, but they often don't aggregate up to something meaningful for customers. CEOs with customer passion have a gut about how they want to show up for customers. It's woven into how they give directives and inspire people. When proposals are made, they have an inner compass which forces proposals to examine customer impact and whether factions of the organization are working together or alone on a solution. They challenge how new ideas contribute to the realization of an end state for customers which they have thought deeply about. And their clarity is palpable and understandable, and they have found a way to communicate so the organization gets it.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Welcome back to the advertising show. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Kevin Lee is co-founder and executive chairman of DidIt and has been an acknowledged search engine marketing expert since 95. Kevin's years of SEM expertise provided the foundation for DidIt's proprietary Maestro search engine and campaign technology. DidIt's unparalleled results, client growth have earned DidIt recognition not only among marketers, also as part of the 2007 Inc. 500. They were number 137, as well as number 12 position on Deloitte's Fast 500. Kevin's paid search strategies column for ClickZ is read by thousands. And of course, we talked about and we'll talk about today the brand new book, The Eyes Have It: How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, and Advertising Anarchy. That's a book that has been widely praised, and we look forward to learning more. We've told you just about pretty much everything about Kevin, but I'm sure he'll add a few things here and
there. Do we need him on the show now?
Yeah, I think we do. Don't go away, Kevin.
I want to find out about his head being in the clouds, what that's all about.
Well, that would mean to me that Kevin is a positive person that likes to think a lot of things, but he's well-grounded. That's all.
Well, and, speaking, I look at this praise. We have a former guest, John Battelle, chairman of Federated Media. He says, over the past decade, Kevin has built a reputation as one of the smartest folks in search marketing. So,
really,
thank you, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's Google Kevin right now and see what
true. There's two responses. One, he's going to be on the show, theadvertisingshow.com.
No, hey, I bet there's a lot more than that.
a record $27.5 billion in ad and media business last year was in play, Ray, handily surpassing the previous record of $22 billion set in 2005, according to an Adweek analysis. The total amount of client dollars that moved or went into review in 2007 represents a 57% increase over the $17.5 billion logged in 2006. Further, based on a study of accounts with more than $20 million in billings, the number of clients that switched shops was up 20% compared to 2006. The big deal last year, I guess, was the Dell Global Marketing Services account, $4.5 billion, won by WPP Group.
Such a deal. Kevin Lee coming on here in just a moment. The Advertising Show powered by Shipple.com and a program called Tendency. Check it out at Shipple.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
That had to be like take one on that commercial. You know, it's like, okay, it's good. Let her go. Kevin Lee is our special guest here on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth out of New York, author of The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, and Advertising Anarchy. Didit.com, D-I-D-I-T.com is the place that you'll find out more about Kevin as well. But Kevin, welcome to The Advertising Show. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ray and Brad.
Yeah, well, we're honored to have you, and thanks for taking time out of your weekend. You came from a traditional advertising background, Kevin, and worked at McCann and JWT before settling into search engine marketing. Talk about how having insight from both the traditional and digital sides of the business in today's world has influenced your perspective on media and advertising.
It's been really great because, I was actually sort of trained more as an economist, but I always loved advertising, so I went into the Madison Avenue realm for a while, and I was able to really understand the needs that the clients have and how they express those needs to the advertising agencies, both from a media and creative perspective, and how the ad agency responds to those objectives that either the CMO or VP of marketing provides.
And search engine, the business that you have been in, search marketing, going back to the 90s, you know anybody else that's been doing it as long as you?
I think we're pretty much tied with one other firm, which was incorporated just about within a month of us, which is iProspect, which actually got sold to Aegis a couple of years ago. But we're still independent, and we're certainly one of the companies that's been around doing this the longest.
So the acquirers out there just haven't hit your number yet, is what you're saying, Kevin.
Well, there's always some number you can't refuse.
Yeah, I figured. Let's talk a little bit about your book. As I mentioned, and Ray did as well, The Eyes Have It, outstanding read, very well put together, published by Easton Studio Press. What was the motivation for creating this book, and who should be reading it, Kevin?
Well, really, it's designed for the CMO, CEO, and VP of marketing to read. Certainly agency folks could read it as well. But it's really sort of a look forward into some of the catalysts that are occurring in the on both the consumer side and advertising side right now, and how that's going to change the face of advertising over the next 3 to 5 years. We already see evidence of that occurring now.
Yeah, and we're going to delve into some of the specifics about that. Your book, looks at the history of marketing, and you use the past as a means of explaining the future. Talk about how the past helps us understand the future when it comes to media marketing.
Well, it's interesting because, when there were only a couple of TV networks, people consumed the advertising right along there with the content that they were interested in, and sort of the commercial spot evolved, and as cable came along and more choices came along, and the remote control became available, that was sort of the beginning of the end for the ability for that advertising to really make an impact. Because when the TiVo or the DVR showed up, people realized they can both pause and fast forward right through the commercials that are not relevant to them. So really the premise of the book is that in order for advertising to continue to influence consumers and bring them further down the buying funnel, it needs to be relevant to them. And that's something that the whole advertising ecosystem is going to have to wrestle with, which is, until I had my daughter, which is, she's 2 years old now, I probably saw several hundred dollars worth of diaper advertising, even at a 20-cent CPM. I saw a lot of advertising, but it was probably closer to a $25 CPM, most of that diaper advertising that I saw for 20 years.
Yeah, and it wasn't until it was relevant and meaningful to you did it really engage with you, right?
Exactly. And so if we don't want the consumers to tune out of the advertising messages, we have to figure out how to target better and move away from a broadcasting paradigm to to a narrow casting paradigm. We were actually figuring out how to use technology that's just about ready to use in both the internet world and as well as within the cable TV world to narrowcast to specific households, as opposed to just tying specific products to a particular show.
Yeah, and you know, for our younger listeners out there, you speak of the old days, back in the early 60s when you had two networks and one spot at 8 p.m. during prime time, you could reach 90% of the U.S. consumer market, and those days have been over for a long while now. Some of what's discussed in The Eyes Have It has to do with the challenges of creating an in-house team that's ready to take on the challenges that you've been talking about, the challenges of the digital age that we're all living and working in today. Explain some of the biggest challenges of creating an in-house team that's prepared to take on the digital age in today's world.
It's really the constant complexity that makes it difficult to have an in-house team operate autonomously in that area. And I'm sure that Brad, given that you had helped invent AdPoint Direct, which was essentially a technology to remove friction from a somewhat inefficient process, that's sort of the same idea here, which is that to try to plan and traffic and execute these buys across a fragmented media landscape is labor-intensive if you don't have the right tools at your disposal, and it's just overwhelming to an in-house team to try to do. You can't create a spreadsheet with enough pivot tables in it to be able to keep track of everything that you're doing and the interaction effects between the media that you purchased here and then the searches that resulted out of that media buy and then what happened to those searchers and which keywords did they use. It gets quite complicated, and there's going to be an ecosystem where there are multiple players involved, not just an in-house team at either the agency or at the marketer themselves.
And when you say multiple players, are you talking about special companies that have special services that they provide?
Certainly I'm sort of betting on that, since that's one of the services we provide, is to help large search engine marketers who are spending, upwards of $30,000 a month into the millions of dollars a month, deal with managing that complexity and maximizing profit. But, there are others who think that can be turned into a technology that even an assistant media planner can use. I don't think it's going to be easy enough to do that, given the quantitative nature of some of these permutations that can occur when you're doing very complex buys. But many people are sort of hoping that it can be boiled down to the point where an assistant media planner can use that, use a tool that everybody could be trained on.
And let's talk a little bit about Didit's proprietary Maestro search campaign technology. I think, although Ray and I may be familiar with that, for our listeners that may not be, describe that for us.
And we're coming up on less than a minute up the break here as well. So.
Sure. Essentially, every keyword that you could bid on within Google, Yahoo, or Microsoft is its own auction, which means that a particular keyword, by the time you take into account day parting and day of week segmentation and geo segmentation, there are thousands and thousands of possible permutations to that. So the question is, when do I bid what? And then what do I do with that click that I'm about to buy? And that's really what our technology helps get to the heart of.
It's Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, and out of New York, the author of The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, and Advertising Anarchy. It's Kevin Lee, the author, here with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. We've got a couple more segments with Kevin. We'll do that in just a minute.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
No matter what shape your stomach's in,
so still get such a visual from that commercial, even though we haven't probably seen it since the 1960s, right, Brad?
Right.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Out of New York, it's the author of The Bloodshot Eyes Habit, or something like that. How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, Advertising Anarchy. It's Kevin Lee, and Did It is actually the company. Didit.com is the website. Kevin, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and staying with the Maestro search campaign technology, but just in a more broader sense, let's talk a little bit about the auction media marketplace for a moment. What challenges, Kevin, do you see this scenario presenting for the near term?
Well, in the near term, most of what's auctioned off is search clicks and search impressions. But there certainly seems to be a momentum towards adding more kinds of media to online media exchanges and online auctions. It's really part of what's been driving Google's pending acquisition of DoubleClick, which is another heavyweight in the industry. And the more ad inventory that shows up in these auctions, the more complex it is going to be to plan it, manage it, buy it, reconcile it. Right now, we don't see a lot of other media besides Internet inventory being auctioned off, and some early Internet companies tried to auction off traditional media, but they were auctioning off the remnant inventory, and there was really a difficulty in ascertaining how much that remnant inventory was worth. But it's fascinating to even think about, well, what would happen if the day before the Super Bowl they actually auctioned those off to the advertisers instead of doing upfronts and predetermined insertion orders and buys? Would those prices actually go up or not? No one really knows the answer to that, but if search marketing were any indicator, one would expect price inflation, because we've seen tremendous price inflation within the pay-per-click search environment.
Well, what about the traditional media's concern of commoditization of ad units from a price integrity or pricing standpoint? Genuine concern or just paranoia on their part?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The problem with everyone looks at the ad auctions in the way that search is currently managed, which is there's not a lot of differentiation because it's lumped together. You know, you can buy from Google search clicks that originate from Google, but they also serve those in AOL, for example, and Ask.com. So they tend to be all sort of commingled together. But that's not the only kind of media auction that could exist. I mean, you could take the first spot after 6 a.m. on the Howard Stern show and auction that off on eBay, for example. And you could describe it as much as you wanted to describe it. You could talk about the demos. You could talk about the GRPs, the reach and the frequency that you might get in a combined buy if it was more than just a single spot. And you could really eliminate any commoditization that would occur. And in that case, instead of an auction like the pay-per-click search auctions that we deal with every day, this would be more of a discrete media auction where discrete spots or the inside front cover of Business Week or the back cover of the Wall Street Journal for next Monday would be auctioned off. And it's not clear that that's necessarily going to happen, but it's a fascinating academic exercise to think about because of the success of the paid search marketplace and how it's turned within less than 10 years into a, $12 or $15 billion business.
Yeah, and, obviously greater inventory pressures drive up prices and no more or very little remnant inventory available. I can't imagine any media outlet having a problem with that.
Exactly.
But yet, you'd mentioned something that keyed on a thought there. I guess I'll have to get back to it. Oh, do you anticipate ever an upfront buy for search?
There's been a lot of discussion of that at fairly senior levels within the search engines and such. And really, it's very difficult to imagine would people pay more to be able to lock in a position for a period of time, which is essentially an upfront, as opposed to the way it is now, which is it's a real-time auction. So if I go in and I change a bid now for the keyword radio advertising and I was bidding on that 10 minutes ago, I can triple my bid now, and within 10 minutes everybody searching throughout the United States would see my ad much higher. If we move to an upfront, there might in fact be marketers willing to pay more to be able to lock that in, but it's not entirely clear. So there are economists at all the search engines sort of working that through and trying to predict that. It's a fascinating idea. And then the question is, if you were to create an upfront, do you make those ad units, which would be blocks of time potentially, tradable? In other words, if I thought I was going to need to buy the keyword cell phone on the first week of June, but now I decided I don't want it, could I actually trade that to somebody else, or am I sort of stuck with it? So there are a lot of interesting factors where potentially media marketplaces could look a lot more like stock or commodity marketplaces, where things are in fact tradable, as opposed to just, you know, buy them once and you're stuck with them.
Well, that would be certainly an interesting way to look at it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I could just see the ad community looking like that here on the Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. We've got Kevin Lee, author of The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos and Advertising Anarchy. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, we've got another segment with Kevin, and we'll do that here in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Men, nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated shave.
It's The Advertising Show, another classic spot, and a great one, too, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest out of New York is Kevin Lee, author of The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos and Advertising Anarchy. Also available, if you'd like to find out more about Kevin, at didit.com. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just to finish up on the potential digital upfront, you didn't mention, or I didn't hear you mention, the problem with just, you know, the billions of dollars that are being poured into digital, to search rather, year after year, and just the available inventory. Isn't that going to be a problem eventually?
Well, I mean, there is actually a fixed amount of search inventory that everybody fights over, and that's part of what's driven prices up as marketers have become more aware of exactly how valuable that search inventory is. We've started to see a little bit of a flattening of that price escalation, but most marketers still don't take into account offline conversion behavior, lagged conversion behavior where you did a search at lunch, but then you went home and used a different computer to complete your purchase. And that's all stuff that we can't track. I mean, we can track a tremendous amount of activity that occurs after the click, but obviously we can't track everything.
Yeah. You know, one of your chapters, and maybe this is why you said that your book should be read by CMOs and marketers, and then you said, and even maybe agencies, because one of your subchapters is entitled, Can You Trust Your Ad Agency, which I found interesting. We have many from certainly the agency side as well as the client side listening today, Kevin. So how can marketers know whether their ad agencies are capable of executing successful digital marketing campaigns?
Well, I think that they just need to keep themselves educated, which is, that's a tall order. But the marketers need to really feel like their agencies are being proactive with regards to changing the media mix and testing the media mix based on where the eyeballs are going, or the ears in the case of radio or audio advertising. So obviously there's been a huge shift in consumption behavior by the consumers, and up till now, we really haven't seen nearly as much of a shift in the dollars spent. So why is that? Well, you know, back when I was in mainstream Madison Avenue, it was pretty rare for the media plan to look dramatically different year over year. But we didn't have that same kind of dramatic shift in consumer behavior then. And it's not clear that the agencies are, that all agencies are moving quickly enough, particularly when they're not comfortable with moving that money into the digital age. The other thing is, from a human resources perspective, it's much more expensive for an agency to spend $1 million in digital media in comparison to more traditional media. And that means their profit margins will actually shrink simply by moving media over from some of the traditional media formats to digital. I'd certainly love to get paid 15% to throw together a campaign that includes a couple of Super Bowl spots. You know, I could spend that money really quickly.
Yeah, well, if you find any of those 15%ers out there that are any media, just make sure and send us an email on that. We'll have them on the show. So based on what you just said, is the traditional media plan obsolete? I mean, if you're out there and you're not looking at digital and you have a traditional media plan that does not include digital, that's a huge mistake in 2008, isn't it?
I think it is, because one of the great things that a really well-planned media plan, the media plan is really critically important, and it should still remain, even the offline one, because people don't search spontaneously. They search as a result of a stimulus, and that stimulus is often advertising. So we find tremendous interaction effects between offline media purchases and online media purchases and search behavior. And it's key that you use search not just as a media type, but essentially as a metric of how well your other advertising is working. The better your advertising is working, the more people will be searching for your product and your brand name as a result of that advertising. So it is critical that you're there when people do in fact want to learn more as a result of your highly effective media campaign.
Kevin, we are out of time, but continued success with your book, The Eyes Have It, How to Market in an Age of Divergent Consumers, Media Chaos, and Advertising Anarchy, and continued success as well with Didit.com. It's been a blast having you on The Advertising Show.
Thanks, Pat.
It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth with more in just a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Kind of featuring themes today on The Advertising Show that have lots of musical notes instead of words. What a concept. Yeah. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth back with just another segment here. And a thank you again to Kevin Lee, our special guest today. Didit.com is the place. That's Didit.com. And we enjoyed the interview and hope you enjoyed it as well. Here in just a few moments, Patrick Meyer is going to be talking about the buzz on The Advertising Show. We'll find out what that's all about. Asics. Used to wear Asics shoes years ago.
I still have running shoes by Asics, yes.
I switched to New Balance because they just fit better. Mm-hmm. But Asics used to be the shoes, and they're looking for growth now in casual runners market. They've tagged its new campaign, Sound Mind, Sound Body, The Effort. Plays up sports shoes, apparel, and accessory. The company's founding philosophy is a series of TV. They'll be doing some print, out-of-home, and online executions that are breaking, actually, this coming month. ASICS, let's see, what is it here? Oh, it stands for Anima Sana In Corpore Sano. Which translates to sound mind and a sound body, for those of you who didn't study the ancient languages or attend a Catholic school. Obviously, I didn't do either.
Is that Italian, I guess? I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess.
I would have thought they were Japanese shoes. I had no idea.
Well, we don't know where they're made either. So,
no, that's true.
But anyway, they used to be great shoes, and they were always, you know, the Asics gel. They were the first ones to come out with the gel and such.
That's actually why I wear them, because the gel helps with any heel strike pain issues, sure. which I've found helpful for me.
But if you look at it now, everybody's doing that. They got the best, right. you know, even the New Balance shoes. I've got a set of golf shoes by Nike that have an incredible shock absorption for the heel and everything. Hmm. So it's pretty good.
Even on grass, they say. So
no, you need it if you're walking a lot and carrying a bag here. Hey, let's check in with Patrick Meyer. He's our marketing insider out of New York, and today he is talking about buzz.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
The secret to buzz in 2008 is about three things. The first is the nugget, the second is the echo, and the third is gearing it for new technology. The nugget is a compelling piece of news value, something that's so intriguing you have to share it with your friends. iPhone when it was coming, great example. The second piece is the echo. Once you've got the nugget, how do you put it out there and then allow it to have an echo? Putting out a piece of video that you can bounce around to your friends. It's either funny, sexy, whatever. But you want to share it with your friends. That's planning for the echo. When you get an article writing about a restaurant or brand new beer or wine, take that, put it online, put it on your website, send it out digitally, put it in blogs. That's planning for the echo. Then the last piece is gearing it for current technology. 10 years ago, when we were experts on buzz, we were doing it with key influencers, getting one person to talk to another person, to a whole peer group, and all the way out. Well, now, with a buddy list, with instant message, with text, with email, with video that you can send out as e-clips to your friends, you can reach out and hit 50 people with a stroke of your return button. So as a brand, you have to make sure you're putting stuff out in a digital form that's easy enough for people to bounce around. So, my friends, when you go forward and you think about news value, you think about word of mouth, and you think about the echo, build it into your plan. Make sure you've got PR, publicist, and you've got news value that you're building into your whole plan that you can then spin out and echo it all across the year.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer as your Marketing Insider. And remember, the revolution is now. Hey, you want to know more? Go to nowinc.net or send me an email at patrick@nowinc.net.
Thanks, Patrick. On The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, and next week, George is going to be with us. George Lewis.
Yeah.
And if you don't know George, just go ahead and Google him, and you'll be very impressed. He has a website, you know, and it has a lot of cool stuff on there. It has the Esquire covers and a whole bunch of other stuff as well.
Which is what, georgelois.com, I would imagine.
I believe so, yes, and it's L-O-I-S, okay?
Yeah.
Websites make it easy to catch a missed TV show. We know that.
Sure.
Sure. There's one on the Sundance channel that we don't get because we don't have that premium package. And also, we don't get golf anymore because they've taken all golf off general market television. You got to watch the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, PGA Tour. That was a real smart move. Anyway, personal thanks from me.
I think the LPGA is on the Logo Channel.
Oh, just don't say that. Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. You'll be calling Brad. Okay.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a little humor.
So even as their supply of new programs dwindles during the months-long writer's strike, which is getting really old, come on, guys, time to go back to work, major TV networks continue to try to capture online viewers, streaming free full-length episodes on their own websites, just as it was just the beginning. Episodes from ABC, CBS, Fox, and NBC are showing up an assortment of sites from big destinations such as AOL to newcomers on VO and MeV. Signs are that the time spent watching video, not just snacks a la YouTube, but full episodes is increasing. So what they're saying is, you can catch the whole stuff on the web now. And that's kind of a cool deal. We talked about that before.
Yeah, and one day, sooner than later, you'll be able to, I think, have access to the Internet on your television, as they call a convergence of, the Internet and TV. And I think we'll all look back on that. Remember when you had to go in the other room to go on the
Internet? Sure. And let's go ahead 10 years and see what, what's going to happen then. Real interesting, a year from now, we'll see what happens because a lot of people are going to be changing the way they watch television because obviously the high def stuff is just going to be the way it is. That's going to be kind of strange to have all the analog gone away.
Yeah, I've got a big investment in the converter boxes. No, I'm kidding. But they're running out of those things. Have you heard about this?
Wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I think, no, we'll finally break down and get a high def television. A color one, too. you know?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go all out here. It'll be fun. Well, it doesn't come with a console, though. And darn, I wish it did. But hope you enjoyed the show today with Kevin Lee. Go get the book. And also, make it a point to jot a note to yourselves that we'll hear George Lois on the show next week. February 6th, that's coming up here at theadvertisingshow.com. That'll be a fun time, as had by all. And we'll get George to tell some fun stories. Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth is a Big Radio Midgets production.